The car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered. Like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches. But there aren't, right?
Right. Because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
Welcome back to Retro Rivals.
Oh my God. Welcome back indeed, guys. This week, we...
No, guys, this is the Pot of Greed.
Yeah, welcome back. Hope you're having a great Thursday. We are excited to see you. And today we have a lot to talk about on the one and only...
podcast on the internet.
So,
before we get started... I'm going to need to see some ones in the chat.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Premier gang.
A few of those. And also some comments, some thumbs ups even. It would really go a long way. Okay, so there's not a lot of Yu-Gi-Oh! News this week.
I certainly didn't see much. I'm not usually looking for it, but I usually still see more than what I've seen this week.
Yeah, not a lot of Yu-Gi-Oh! But there are a couple of quick things I figure we can kind of touch on. So... Legendary 5D's decks, as you know, was delayed until this week. So it actually was supposed to be like releasing in OTS stores Wednesday.
I cannot wait to pick mine.
Regular stores Friday. Well, you will have to wait a little bit longer because Konami actually put out a statement saying that shipments to our hobby distributors are going out this week and next. Most retailers will not have the product available on November 21st. We will update you as more information becomes available.
So wait. That sounds less like card shops are having a delay, and it's more like big box retailers are going to have a delay.
Well, I'm not sure exactly what they mean, because our local card shop, where I was planning on getting some Legendary 5D's decks to use for videos, said that their shipment got delayed. So I think it's just kind of it might be an across-the-board thing.
Guys, let us know if your local shop is having a delay of the product, because we'll just go to you.
Yeah,
we'll get it however we got to get it.
We will fly all the way there. Yeah, but I'm kind of upset by that just because like I really did want to.
I just want my Molcharmies, man.
Yeah, looking forward to my Molcharmies, my staples, and some videos out of the deal as well. But alas, we will get the videos out as soon as we're able to get the product as well. Thanks. Contrary to popular belief, Konami does not send us these products
anymore, to be completely
clear. Yeah, there's been times
we haven't had them before. It just has been some years.
Yeah, there's been some times in the past when they have. I got an interesting tweet the other day where somebody like tweeted at me or like at the Team APS account or whatever, and they're like, yeah, you know, you guys, I think they tagged some other YouTubers too, but they're like, you guys should like use your influence, like influence Konami to like make Genesis format the normal format, like something kind of like that. And I was like, oh, that's like an interesting idea, but like what influence at Konami? I was like, I don't know that I have any influence at Konami. And I think I replied and I was like, oh, like, you know, what do you mean or something? And then they were like, well, you would think that they would like listen to the people that they send products out to or they give products to. And I'm just like, Konami does not give me products. So
we haven't received the product from Konami in some time. Yeah, even when we did, I don't think we had any extra say in how things went.
Yeah.
When Konami makes an announcement, it's an announcement for us too. We don't even know things ahead of time.
Yeah. It's, that's kind of how it goes, but it's interesting to see that people have, I guess, differing ideas around what sponsored kind of Yu-Gi-Oh! Content creator means, and I guess maybe from Konami's end, maybe they haven't made it clear enough who is and isn't.
That's true, because once again, we are not sponsored content creators under Konami. We are barely content creators. We're kind of just Yu-Gi-Oh! Fans who like to turn on cameras and like say things.
Sorry, I was adjusting my camera.
And you almost dropped your mic.
Yeah, so clearly we're not good content creators, as you can tell. Okay. Next quick Yu-Gi-Oh! Thing, don't miss out on this month's Lost Art promotion card, Konami says. So they are releasing Backup at Ignister when you spend at least 30 US dollars or 40
Back
Canadian.
That ad up.
Yeah. So the different, I couldn't spot the difference with her at first, but I found out that they moved the hexagons.
The real cultured Yu-Gi-Oh! Players can see immediately.
They moved the hexagons on her to like better, I guess, cover up her body.
Y'all, she thick. I don't know what to tell you. She just thick. I don't even know who even drew that. I've never seen a Yu-Gi-Oh card just drawn thick like that before. That's crazy.
I will include the art on the screen and you guys can. Well, that's all the Yu-Gi-Oh.
Wow, that was fast.
I mean, so there is other stuff. Like, we have gotten some reveals for, like, OCG cards. Like, a lot of these, like, animation chronicle type things. And, like, you know, the OCG has all these sets that are just called things that you don't.
The only new card I've seen is the new Shadal card, which I did not read. I looked at the artwork and called it a day.
Yeah, I'm trying to see. I'm trying to see if I could find it, but I guess I don't have Yu-Gi-Oh! News TCG bookmarked anywhere right now.
Let me see. That's where we get all our Yu-Gi-Oh! News from.
Yeah. So, like, Konami just revealed some cards in the upcoming Premium Pack 2026. Premium Pack 2026 is more anime import cards. I guess that'll be stuff that's in, like, Bows of Legend, maybe.
That's typically how we get those.
Or, like, Maze of Muertos.
Could be in the Maze of.
Yeah, it could be, like, some Maze of cards. There's all kinds of things. There's, like, hero cards, Red Dragon cards and Stardust cards.
Heroes, you say?
Yeah, there's a little bit of everything. I even saw, like, there's, like, random stuff for, like, Redaplant, Starving Venom Dragon, and all kinds of things. So
come on now, let's not do that Predaplant thing again. All right, y'all.
But yeah, that's kind of like it for Yu-Gi-Oh. It's a light news week. Oh, I forgot to mention this at the top of the pod. Next week we're going to be doing an emptying the pod episode
because it's the holidays and we gotta move around, and we're not gonna be in our chairs. All right, guys. So we gotta do an emptying pot.
Yeah. So what that basically means is you guys can leave your viewer submitted questions, and next week's episode will be just entirely us catching up on and answering viewer questions.
And we're gonna have a competition to see who can leave the longest question that Paul will then read.
Next time you're gonna be reading some.
I'll be a little congested, so I think I'm gonna need you to do it.
Yeah, so make sure that you hurry and leave those, you know, as soon as you're hearing this, because we'll probably be pre-recording that, you know, sometime this weekend or something. Mm-hmm. So it'll be helpful if you can get your question in sooner rather than later. Okay, card game news in general. What's going on?
The first thing I actually saw that I thought was pretty cool was Magic the Gathering was showing off their latest Secret Lair.
Okay.
And it's a IP that is very near and dear to my heart. Monster Hunter is doing a Secret Lair super drop, and the super drops are just a Secret Lair, but it has like multiple packages within it. So if you want all the cards, you have to pay a pretty penny.
Yeah. So Monster Hunter is, I think that is a fitting Secret Lair. It doesn't feel like it's like a full set's worth of, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think it's.
And the IP doesn't feel so far away from what we've already seen in Magic the Gathering. We're not talking about, you know, SpongeBob SquarePants here. This is a franchise of, monsters. You know, namely dragons. And, you know, those are other very creatures. Popular in Magic
the
Gathering.
And I guess the people that hunt them.
And in the hunters, like, they don't look so crazy that you couldn't imagine them ending up in the Magic the Gathering universe. But it has multiple sets. There's the Hunt, which are cards, I think, that are just based off of moments hunting monsters. There's the Hunters, which features, the Monster Hunters themselves, wearing iconic armors that you can get in the different Monster Hunter games. There's the Monsters, actually featuring monsters like the Rathalos, the Fatalis, the Nergigante, the Zinogre.
I remember Rathalos was in Final Fantasy.
Rathalos is probably their most popular monster.
When they did a little Final Fantasy Monster Hunter collab, it's Final Fantasy 14.
Oh, there's also the monsters too, because Monster Hunter has a lot of monsters, so you can do a whole other package of just those. That's like the Gore Magala, the Brachiodos, the Velcana.
So I guess I keep forgetting. I know like we talk about these secret layers a lot. Mm-hmm. There's four different ones.
Yes, hunters, monsters. Yeah, there's four separate ones, but there's also the foil versions of each, and there's one kind of like super package of everything.
How much does it cost for everything, I wonder?
Everything? Here it is. Let's see. So do you want everything at the highest rarity, or do you want everything at the lowest rarity?
Both.
It makes a big difference.
Oh, is it? Oh my God, I see these prices. No, that's insane.
So there's their Amped State Surge Foil Bundle, where that is everything in English and Japanese in surge foiling. That is $239.96. So essentially $240 if you want everything as shiny as humanly possible. There's the Hunter's Carve Bundle, which is everything but not in...
These bundles
Yeah, these are non-foil. Non-foil secret layers. Wait, why is this one cheaper?
More expensive? I have no idea. Because that was... So the Amp State Surge Foil Bundle is $239. The Hunter's Carve Bundle is $279, which I guess... But it looks like you are getting more.
It has more in it.
Oh, you're getting the foil and the non-foil.
Oh, okay.
I guess.
Yeah, you're right. You are getting foil and non-foil versions of everything.
But you're not getting them in surge foil.
No.
Okay. And then finally, if you want what seems like everything.
That's master rank.
Then you get, oh, you know what, though? That's $559 and that's everything. That still doesn't include the surge foil ones.
That's crazy. That is absolutely insane.
And they each also have soul ring promos.
Oh, yeah. I meant to look at the soul ring. The soul ring for this one, because they always have to give you like a soul ring in each one of these, or at least some very staply artifact card. This one features, I have no idea what that is. Hmm. It is a dragon with fire coming out of its wings.
I will say of the artwork just in general for these literally could have fooled me and just been like, oh, these are just Magic the Gathering cards. Like, it's a very clean fit, I would say. This is obviously coming from, you know, a person who does not know.
Now, I think the monsters fit really well. I mean, Magic has existed for so long. We've seen so many different types of monster designs that the Monster Hunter monsters, they don't feel that far off.
Like this card, Tooth and Nail, kind of towards the top. Tooth and Nail and like Song of the Barbarous Beast.
Ah, from the Hunt
stuff.
Series.
Like these look like. These are just literally like Magic the Gathering cards. Like I feel like these are what I would have seen like 20 years ago in Magic the Gathering.
And now you can get them in 2025.
So are you going to be picking up the Secret Lair?
No.
Okay.
I am simply too... Guys, we have talked about my Magic budget.
Yeah, Magic's just not on the totem pole right now.
I can't do it. I'm waiting for the next Marvel set.
There's two Marvel sets, isn't there?
Yeah, it was Spider-Man, and now we're getting kind of the general Marvel set. Look, it's a lot, bro. Goodness. But
okay, so what you were getting last time was the Marvel Secret Lair.
Yeah, that was lair where I got. Well, I only got the Storm pack. I didn't get all of them because I'm not made of money.
Right, okay.
But well, hey, guys, if you become members of the channel, maybe you can help fund my ability to get Magic Gathering Secret Lairs. If you do want to do that, go ahead and join APS Amplifier's membership page and just leave a comment saying that you're here to help me buy Secret Lairs.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's cool. I would get this if I liked, you know, Monster Hunter more. I don't know very much about it, so.
Well, you know, maybe this is your chance to get into it. You know, Monster Hunter recently did their new Final Fantasy XIV collaboration where you can actually get Final Fantasy XIV armors and abilities in Monster Hunter right now.
Cool.
You don't sound that excited.
I mean, I'm not. I don't.
You will pay the $70.
I have to say, I think I might be one of the least moved by like collabs gamers. I don't know. Like, I don't. Collabs never excite me. Like, I feel like I like to joke about, like, oh, if they did like this, I'd buy. I don't think I ever really do.
I've seen you wear your Sonic Crocs every day for a month before.
No. I mean, like gaming stuff where it's like this, like, game character is in this other game. Like, I don't have a problem with buying like branded merchandise, like, you know, like a Sonic backpack or whatever. But like, when it's like, this character is in this other like multiplayer game, and this is supposed to like get you to like care and play it, and like it never moves me.
I think it's because of your rich history in the Smash Brothers community, which kind of wrote the book on collabs.
A little, maybe. I don't know. Do you find that like these sorts of collabs like get you your blood pumping? Like, I have to like play this game now. I need to like my favorite IP.
Yes.
Okay.
Because I love things. That's what love is.
Okay. Love is collabs.
Love is flying to literally any IP that collabs with one of your favorites. Gundam, Ghost in the Shell, and
I know you played a Call of Duty Ghost in the Shell. That was the thing.
Of course I did. I had no choice.
Was Gundam Ghost also in that?
Gundam was also in Call of Duty. Yeah. So you know what I did. I don't even, guys, I don't like Call of Duty.
Oh my God. That reminds me actually of a Call of Duty story. I need to hurry and find an ad. But yeah, no, I don't know. For me, it's, it doesn't really do it for me. But so it sounds like you're not that into the Monster Hunter one though.
I can't afford it. Like, it's too expensive. I mean, okay. I could be convinced, but I know for a fact I am saving my money because I've mapped out my Magic the Gathering purchases for the next 2 years or the next year going to 2026. I already know what I'm going to buy, so I can't break the plan now just because I feel a little weak. I gotta hold it together.
Okay, well. Anyway.
I'd also be a bad influence if I didn't try and influence you guys to buy things. So, hey, this looks really cool. You should buy it.
It's certainly something. At any rate, yeah, that's Magic the Gathering. So I saw an interesting story. This one is, well, there's like two Pokemon stories, I guess. But this one's about a card shop related thing.
Okay.
So did you know that Tom Brady... Actually,
he has a Pokemon now? He cloned a Pokemon?
Maybe. Tom Brady's New York City card store was robbed of nearly $10,000 just 2 weeks after opening.
Wait.
Yeah.
Tom Brady has a card shop?
Apparently so.
It's not like a sports card thing, right?
That's what I thought, but there's more to it. So Tom Brady's new card vault store in New York City was robbed of nearly $10,000 worth of merchandise on Monday, October 20th. This has been like a couple weeks now, but I forgot to bring the story. According to a New York City Police Department report, the suspect allegedly entered the store on Lafayette Street in New York and attempted to purchase $9,710 worth of collectible baseball and Pokemon cards when his credit card declined. So... according to the news release, the suspect, who remains identified, began to enter manual prompts into the contact payment terminal without the employee's knowledge to bypass the transaction being declined, and then left the store with the merchandise and traveled south, and they said no injuries were reported. And
Wait. How negligent does your staff have to be to allow that to happen?
Very.
Because like, from the way this story started, I thought this was going to be a serious like breaking and entering thing. Someone's going to get away with almost $10,000 worth of product. You think they had to break in when it's outside of store hours or something, but they did it right in front of the faces of the staff.
Or maybe not in front of the faces of the staff. Maybe the staff was just literally like just turning the other way.
Somebody has $10,000 worth of product and you're turning ever? That's insane to me.
Yeah, so the suspect's currently being investigated for grand larceny, which in New York State covers incidents in which the value of the stolen property exceeds $1,000. Yeah, so Brady, the 7-time Super Bowl champion, purchased a 50% stake in Card Vault in February 2025. So I guess it's basically, you could say it's his card store.
I mean 50%, he is joint owner at that point.
Probably majority owner, honestly. Okay, here's what he says about the card shop and why he has it, because you were asking.
I am asking.
Sports, collectibles, and cards have been a part of my DNA since childhood, and Card Vault has set the gold standard for what a modern fan experience should be, he said in the same press release. That's the press release.
Okay, you don't have to advertise the store.
This isn't just about buying and selling cards. It's about curating history, building community, turning fans into collectors, and giving them access to own great moments in sports. God, that sounds like an AI-generated paragraph.
The man's been in front of press for... decades now. He can talk like a press release.
Yeah, I mean, cool. So I hope that they find the merchandise, because it sounds like some of it was Pokemon cards. So I figured it's kind of a Pokemon.
I don't understand how you can't find it. They probably everyone saw the guy who did it. Like,
yeah, that's true. Like, I mean, I guess maybe the employees didn't, since they seem so negligent about it.
Negligence is insane to me. Tom Brady to fire all y'all.
Yeah. Oh, that reminds me. So there's a little update actually to the story from last week. Last week we were talking about this story where like Walmart is going to be limiting the amount of Pokemon cards you can buy because of like the situation with like a manager where somebody bought like everything on the shelf. Mm-hmm. Turns out that manager, people corrected me in the comments, that manager actually was like complicit in that. Like that manager was allowing, I guess, somebody that he or she knew
They knew they were going to they helped to just, them
allow them to purchase it all. So kind of a just a neat little tidbit I thought was worth updating us on. So basically, in the, in our coverage of it, your news podcast.
Journalists.
Yeah. We were saying how, you know, like, we made it sound, I guess, like the manager was like the victim in this. Like, they didn't know, like, this person's buying all this stuff, but it sounds like they did know.
Was an accomplice to the crime of buying something.
Yeah. I mean, you know, still, they shouldn't have allowed.
They were buying something in a quantity they weren't allowed to. Mm-hmm. So, I understand. That actually goes back to, like, economics, but I'm not getting into an economic debate here.
Yeah. So, just kind of a little update on the Pokemon stuff. That's You've been slacking in the Pokemon Theft Story department, so I need to find one to satisfy the people.
Like, people aren't stealing Pokemon cards as much as they used to, unless it's from Tom Brady, it seems.
Yeah. Actually, I'm pretty sure they're probably stealing them just as much, if not more, but...
Well, you got... And then Google's, like, news thing is not working very well for me anymore.
Well, speaking of Pokemon, here's something new. Pokemon fans will need to pass a fitness test before entering the new Tokyo theme park.
Well, on the bright side, because of Pokemon Go, I think a lot of Pokemon players, like, you know, they're more capable than they've ever been.
Yeah, that was in 2016, though. They've gained all the weight back. Oh. So you might remember that we talked about this new Tokyo theme park. Remember they showed it at, like, the Pokemon Day Direct?
This is my favorite episode. Sorry, I interrupted you. But the picture in the article is from, like, one of my favorite episodes of Pokemon.
Yeah, I vaguely remember this episode.
This was the episode where Ash meets the Sandshrew trainer, where his Pokemon workout.
AJ? Was that his name?
I think it might have been AJ. Or
something like
that. And his Pokemon work out and get buff. And so it got to the point where his Sandshrew could shake off water type attacks.
Yeah, I do remember that, I think. I remember, like, somebody was, like, kind of abusive to their Pokemon.
It was. He had a whip and everything.
Yeah, that was
and
AJ.
Ash thought he had to protect AJ's Pokemon from him. But they were like, whoa. They were like, hey, don't mess with my trainer. This is what it's like over here. Spartans.
Well, yeah, Pokemon's getting its own theme park in Tokyo. But attendees are going to need to pass a fitness test to ensure they can actually catch them all. So you might remember with this theme park that basically there's sort of two sections of it. This is PokePark Kanto. It's going to be opening in February of next year. Mm-hmm. And the way that it works is there's Sedgetown and then the Pokemon Forest. So Sedgetown is kind of just your typical touristy attraction thing. You have the gift shops, special stage shows, some rides, things like that.
Right.
But the Pokemon Forest is where you will actually traverse across different regions, catching Pokemon and battling other trainers.
I thought it was like a glorified, like, photo op situation.
So that's kind of what it looked like, but apparently it's actually much more than that, because you will have to be, like, crossing rivers, wading through tall grass. I'm sure, like, it's like
that's small, where the Pokemon be waiting.
Small rivers, I would hope. But yeah, so the Pokemon Forest tasks attendees with walking a 1,640-foot-long nature trail.
Oh, wow.
Complete with grassy sections, changes in elevation levels, and even tunnels. Because of this, PokePark Kanto's ticket policy states that hopeful trainers must have the ability to climb 110 steps. Without assistance.
Oh, yeah, man. That they can't bring that over to the West.
Yeah.
They would have the shortest amusement park lines of all time.
Those who can't won't be able to go into the woods. Children under 5 are also barred from entry to this area, as well as any kids who can't make the climb, even if they're accompanied by a parent or guardian. So.
Wow.
Yeah, so I guess if you haven't been getting your steps in on Pokemon Go, you might not be ready to experience the Pokemon Forest at PokePark Kanto.
Leave it to the Japanese to make it a fitness challenge.
I mean, from what it...
I thought you were going to say that. And then after that, they have to scale a wall if they're going to reach the onyx at the top.
Now, if this picture... Do you see this picture here? I don't know.
Oh, yeah, I did see it.
This picture is to be believed. It looks like it's kind of like just a pretty basic nature trail without like a... Like, it's not like high elevation or anything. Because, I mean, I remember I did my first hike a few months ago, this past summer... And it was like...
You climbed Everest, huh?
It was like several hundred feet in elevation that, like, we climbed. Like, it was definitely higher than, like, I think what this is. So, I don't know.
So, I mean, I'm from New Orleans, Louisiana. We're perpetually below sea level. I believe a hike should start below sea level and stop once you reach sea level.
Yeah, this is interesting. I would like to go to Poke Park Kanto. It sounds like it would be fun.
I'm sure that's like the understatement of the century. I feel like everybody in
the backup line is probably so. Like,
you probably have to like get your ticket 2 years in advance.
Exactly. Yeah, I feel like you literally won't be able to go until like 2028 if you haven't already bought a ticket. So,
well, I guess we should start now.
Yeah, we should just go ahead and get our tickets right now.
And guys, if you want to help us get to Poke Park Kanto, then go ahead and become members.
Yeah, be a channel member. We'd love it. Fund our trip to Poke Park Kanto that we won't get to take for like another 2 years. I'm kidding, by the way. Not about the becoming a channel member part, but about, you know. Anyway, so that's the Pokemon news as far as I can tell. I mean, if there's more Pokemon news, it's Pokemon, but that's the Pokemon news that I found.
Yeah, that's what we know about.
Back to you, Duelist.
About what?
Whatever the next story is.
I have no idea what next story is.
Okay. Well, let's talk about something else. I think that's all the card games, right?
Yeah, I'm scrolling right now to see.
Okay, yeah, I don't think I have any card game stories. That is all the card game stuff.
Okay.
All right, so I guess we can talk a little bit more about these Nintendo-related things.
Yeah.
There's a couple.
Yeah, I see them now.
First of all, we didn't talk about the Super Mario Galaxy movie trailer that came out last week.
But didn't we watch it last week?
Yeah, we watched it, but we didn't talk about it on the podcast.
Huh, wow.
I think because like Valve Steam stuff.
Oh, that took up a lot of our time.
Yeah, so the Super Mario Galaxy trailer. You saw it. What'd you think?
Whoever made that Bowser Peach artwork, you knew exactly what you did, and you are a dirty, dirty, dirty dog for that.
Dirty in a good way or dirty in a bad?
Both, honestly.
Okay.
Both. I thought the trailer was really interesting. That's not interesting. Entertaining. Because I enjoyed the trailer. I don't know if I'm going to see the movie.
I mean, you saw the first one.
Yeah, but I didn't go because I want to see it.
Okay.
I went because someone like invited me to go. Like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest Mario guy. I never really have been. Like, Mario's cool. I don't hate Mario. Not like how I hate Sonic. But Mario, you know, it's just all right. Like, if my little brother wants to go and I have the ability to take him, I'll take him to go see it. But
yeah, I mean, I thought the trailer looked really nice. I've always been impressed with Luminous Studios or whatever.
That does Illumination. That's the people that have the Minions.
Yeah. The CG and stuff, like, and just the art style that they use for those movies is always very, it's very, like, just captivating to me. Like, it brings the world to life in a great way.
I do like the narrative they're going for.
Yeah, so it seems like this time it starts with, if you haven't seen the trailer, I mean, you've seen the trailer.
Spoiler.
Yeah. You know, like, Bowser is still, I guess, like, has been, like, shrunken by whatever they used to shrink him at the end of the first movie.
Spoiler for the first movie.
Yeah, but now Bowser Jr. is here to rescue his dad. And
so, really, Mario and Luigi are the bad guys here.
Yeah, basically. And then also Rosalina makes an appearance. And that's actually what I wanted to talk the most about, because Rosalina is being voiced by Brie Larson.
Oh, yeah.
From probably most notably like Captain Marvel, but also many other films and other stuff like that.
Scott Pilgrim.
I thought that was just really cool, because apparently she's a very big Super Mario Galaxy fan.
I did not know that. That was not what I knew about her.
Yeah, I remember there was like a headline from several years ago where she kicked her boyfriend out of the house because he said that she was taking Super Mario Galaxy too seriously.
That is grounds for being kicked out. I get that. As someone who is proclaimed to not be a big fan of Mario, I understand getting kicked out because of it. I get it.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I thought that was just really cool. She apparently really is like quite the Nintendo, like Mario fangirl, and she was very happy to get the role. It's funny because I saw on her Twitter, she actually she finally released this video where she was at the Nintendo like amusement park earlier this year when she got cast, and she recorded a video there, and she's like super excited, and then she finally got to like release the video like last week when she got the casting announcement.
I think, but more importantly than even Rosalina's casting, who's going to play Luma?
A lot of people, I bet. Like, I feel like
there's I need it to be Danny DeVito.
Okay.
That's what I need. I need Luma as Danny DeVito.
So, yeah, I don't know. I think the Super Mario Galaxy movie, it looks cool. I will probably go and see it. I mean, I don't know if it'll be like a day one watch for me, but I did see the first one and I thought it was fine. I don't think I liked it as much as the Sonic movies, because those are a little bit more narrative in nature. Whereas The Mario Galaxy one is.
But this one's going to have a very provocative theme where a child has to fight against two evil plumbers to reclaim their parent.
Yeah.
Who's his mom?
You don't know Peach? That. Well, I mean, Bowser has always kind of told Bowser Jr. that Peach is his mom.
Because he doesn't look nothing like
Galaxy. But it's also at the end of Galaxy, like, Bowser Jr. is like, yeah, I knew you were lying the whole time, but it was like still kind of nice to believe.
Dang.
So it kind of suggests that, like, we don't know who his mom is.
Honestly, it looks like Bowser had him and a Ditto made Bowser Jr.
I mean, for all we know, it might be that Koopas are, like, the way that they reproduce is different than what we know.
Oh, they might do, like, an asexual thing.
I mean, asexual thing. It might just, like, yeah, the egg just appears or something.
Bowser just pops an egg out and, like, oh, you're my child. I'm your father.
I feel like he wouldn't even pop out an egg. I feel like it'd be, like, a shell. It'd be like a Koopa. He just pops out of a shell and like nothing's in it yet. But like then it in a few days, like some arms and stuff pop out. And then that's Bowser Jr. But yeah, I think this is going to be a really cool one. I just thought it was like nice that Brie Larson, just this like longtime Mario fan, got kind of cast in the dream role. And I saw a little clip where they showed like a little bit of like her voice acting as Rosalina. And the voice really fits. I'd play it on here, but I get copyright struck.
I don't actually know what Rosalina's supposed to sound like. She had sound effects in Smash Brothers, but I never really paid enough attention to know.
She's just like typical Mario characters. She doesn't actually talk. It's just more like, ooh, like just sort of saying like things.
Sound effects.
Yeah, like sound effects and just, you know, whatever, kind of giggles or laughs, but nothing like.
So you can make anything of it.
Yeah, so you can kind of do whatever you want with it. Sort of similar to like Anya Taylor-Joy with Peach. Just sort of gave her a.
Anya Taylor-Joy plays Peach?
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think she does a pretty good job as well. And of course, all the other people, Jack Black's returning as Bowser, Chris Pratt, Mario, you know, so.
I guess it's really hard to go wrong when voicing the Mario cast because they just simply don't have voices, not really.
Yeah. I think, is Yoshi going to be in this movie? Did they say that? Do you know?
No idea. Was Yoshi not in the last one?
I don't think Yoshi was in the last one.
Oh, okay.
I would wonder, like, who would voice Yoshi? That seems like a...
I think anyone can. Oh, they should get Vin Diesel.
Just any name you can find.
He's good at voicing creatures.
Okay, so in Nintendo movie news, we also got the first official Legend of Zelda movie photos showing Link and Zelda in costume.
I was looking at this and I thought it was AI, given how much Loki, they looked like real life versions of those characters.
So yeah, Nintendo just released the first set photos showing its Legend of Zelda action movie stars in action. The images were posted to the Nintendo Today app, and the first official glimpse at Bo Bragason as Zelda and Benjamin Evan Ainsworth as Link.
I don't know who any of these actors are, but they are now Link and Zelda. That's what those characters look like. That's just them now.
Mm-hmm. You can describe it. What do they look like, if you don't mind?
So I didn't play Breath of the Wild, just to be clear. But like everybody, I've seen a stupid number of pictures and artwork of the characters. And it feels like a really high quality cosplay of those characters.
Yeah.
But it comes together really well. It matches the environment. I don't know. They look really good as the characters. This feels like really good costuming and makeup.
Yeah, and it's being shot in New Zealand, which, man, like this Hyrule Field kind of setting is. It really feels like it's like pulled straight from the game.
It's giving Legend of Zelda.
Yeah, like I think that they've captured the essence. And it's always like a concern when, you know, like you hear about things being live action. And like, do you ever get that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think every nerd does nowadays. Like, to some degree, you have to have that trepidation in your soul when one of your favorite things is going live action.
Yeah, but they've got me. I mean, I feel good about this. This feels like the essence of The Legend of Zelda, right? Like, it's very, I don't know if, like, rustic is the word, but, like.
Well, I do have some trepidation when it comes to the live-action Legend of Zelda. Much like the characters in Mario, Legend of Zelda characters aren't really known for having voices.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they're about to pull out some wild accents for us.
Yeah, that is something I was kind of wondering about. Now, that said, and I didn't play like Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, but they there is voice acting in those.
Like, I think, full voice acting?
Yeah, I think Zelda and Ganondorf are voice acted, but and like Link is still isn't.
Wouldn't that be funny if Link's a mute in this movie too?
They shouldn't do that.
That would be funny.
Yeah. Also, somebody was noting that the movie's incarnation of Zelda is wearing blue robes, which is similar to her Breath of the Wild attire. But Link is in still in green robe with the green tunic, which is kind of more similar to how he looks in Twilight Princess. But I think that's actually cool because that means that it might not be that they're trying to like make a rendition of any one Zelda game, but maybe their own just general approximation of the Legend of Zelda story, which I would like.
I mean, to some degree it makes sense. If you want to do Legend of Zelda where both characters play an active role, then you might want to have the stylings of Breath of the Wild. But then Link's most iconic look is not what he wears in Breath of the Wild. It's the green tunic. Like that's the look plus the hat, but I don't see the hat here. So I guess we're not doing the hat, and that's a bit of a shame.
I think this is good because... Yeah, I guess you're right. He doesn't seem to be wearing the hat.
I mean, the hat's goofy, but I still would have liked this. Maybe there'll just be an Easter egg with the hat.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they picked the renditions of these characters. Like, Link, like you said, I mean, as long as he's wearing a green tunic, that's kind of his look. But I think that this rendition of Zelda is a lot better because she's more active looking.
Mm-hmm. Traditionally more action-y.
Being, like, just princess in a long, you know, stuffy dress wouldn't allow for them to maybe both be adventuring around. Because it kind of seems like if I had to just take a wild guess at what this movie is going to play out like, I think they're going to be going on the journey together more
so. It does seem like that'll be the case.
Not just like, oh, he has to rescue her.
Like the beginning of any good Legend of Zelda game. She gets captured within the first like 5 minutes of the game, and then you spend the next 3 weeks of your life finding her again.
Yeah, and I think that's probably for the best. I'd like for them to both kind of be able to share the spotlight. I would guess that like, he won't know her at first. They'll meet, whatever. They'll kind of go through most of the journey together. And then she might get captured at, like, the very end, like, in the last third of it. But it won't be, like, forever type of thing. That'd be my hunch, anyway.
But it does have me really interested in seeing the rest of the casting for it. More so than Marvel, Legend of Zelda, actually, I do have more of an interest in. I don't play any of the modern games, but I played a lot of Legend of Zelda as a kid. So... I'm just looking forward to seeing this more from this movie. Can't wait for it to be a trailer, honestly.
It's going
to
be releasing on May 7th, 2027. So it's like a ways away, but it sounds like they've really only just started shooting. And so I
have to live until 2027. Okay, I'll do my best.
I wonder how they're going to cast Ganondorf. That's going to be a difficult one.
I don't think that'll be all that hard. I mean, what? Just get a big guy?
Well, no, but the problem with
Ganondorf... Get a Skarsgård.
Well, the problem with Ganondorf, though, is, like, he's, like, canonically, like literally, like, 8 or 10 feet tall or something.
Get a Skarsgård.
So, like, that might be... Wait, what is that?
Oh, like, the Skarsgård siblings? They're all just these giant, like, actors. Oh,
okay.
They like to play Vikings and things.
Oh, maybe... Actually, that might just be perfect. Yeah, because I'm always wondering, like, how much CG these movies will use. Like, I think with The Legend of Zelda, you can... kind of get away with, like...
You probably don't need that much in that series.
I think it'd mostly be for, like, the monsters, like the goblins and stuff that you fight. But, like, generally, you could kind of not have to use, like, too much.
I mean, egregious. I guess for, like, the magic.
Yeah, that's
Link
true.
Link doesn't use, like, magic, but Zelda sure does.
Zelda typically uses magic. Link typically has, like, maybe a magical companion. Like, you think of, like, Navi or Midna, things like that. So... I don't know. Just things. They've got a long way to go, so.
I do think it'd be funny if this movie is a mashup of everything from the Legend of Zelda series. So that halfway through the movie they hop on a ship to sail to the wilds, and at the end of the movie, Link transforms into a werewolf.
Yeah, Midna, the Wind Waker, whatever other games I miss. Skyward Sword.
The moon tries to kill them all. I don't know. That would be terrible, but I think it will be funny.
Yeah, so that's the Legend of Zelda movie. And the gaming news doesn't stop there because there's still more before we get the Game Awards, which is kind of the big thing that's happening this week.
I didn't know that was happening.
Or not happening, announced, I suppose. So here's a small quick one, though. IKEA, in an IKEA store in Atlanta, hosts the furniture brand's first ever in-store Tekken tournament.
I was very curious why you said gaming, yeah, gaming. And then said IKEA after.
So what do you think when you hear that?
Okay, I'm going to stop reading. I can only assume that in order to decide who's going to assemble the furniture, they hold a Tekken tournament, and the loser of losers of every matchup have to build the furniture.
Well, it's not exactly like that.
I have no idea. How was I supposed to guess?
A group of tournament organizers in Atlanta, Georgia, set up the first ever Tekken tournament held inside an IKEA to promote the store's line of gaming furniture. So I guess they have like some gaming desks and chairs now.
Okay, that's not too crazy.
So basically the way that it worked is, an IKEA employee and fighting game fan got the idea to host a tournament on the store's showroom floor to promote the brand's extensive line of gaming furniture. They worked with local gaming organization 404 Esports, which sounds vaguely familiar. Like maybe I've heard they sponsor a Smash player or something, to procure consoles and monitors. And they were sourced from their own stock of IKEA's gaming chairs and desks for players to sit in and compete. In total, 12 players participated in the bracket, with the first place prize earning I'm not going to even try to pronounce this name of this desk.
Say it.
You say it.
Oh, I can't find it in the...
Oh, it's the Hubbard Spellair desk.
I'm so glad you said it anyway.
I think IKEA is like German, I believe. Or Swedish.
Maybe. It's one or the other. I have no idea where they're from.
Either way, it's a prize... And you get a desk and a chair set. Okay. It's a prize with a combined value of $429. And then second and third place winners got $150 and $75 IKEA gift cards, respectively. And they also all got passes to the Atlanta-based fan convention MomoCon. So.
That sounds like a cool event, honestly.
Yeah, I thought that was just kind of a nice, like, feel-good story, you know?
I'm mad they didn't post a bracket and who won, but okay.
Oh, no, you can see who won. They posted a tweet, which I'll actually pull it up, because I think that the usernames, or I guess gamer tags, of the winner is mentioned. Let's see. Yeah, first place went to K-Dash, and second place went to JJ Breeze, and third place to O.N2.
What? O.N2 got third place?
Do you know who that is? I don't...
No, I have no idea.
Yeah, here's the... This guy won first place, this guy won second, this guy won third.
They took their pictures. Congratulations to the IKEA winners. I don't know. You know, IKEA really needs to hold like Yu-Gi-Oh tournaments.
I think it would be kind of fitting. Like
card games have to be played on tables.
True.
IKEA makes tables.
You know, this reminded me of actually was there's like a lot of controversy around like winning. What was it? Like air fryers at Yu-Gi-Oh tournaments or whatever as the prizing, and people were kind of like giving these places a hard time. I actually don't, like, this seems like a pretty fun prize. Like, I would compete in, like, a fighting game or, like, a Yu-Gi-Oh tournament for, like, a desk and a chair.
But would you fly to New York to do it?
Wait, why? What do you mean?
Well, I mean, that's kind of, the point with the whole Yu-Gi-Oh thing, right? Players would travel to a Yu-Gi-Oh tournament to win an air fryer.
Well, no. The air fryers were always, like, regionals. Or in like sometimes like large locals. Oh. Yeah, that was the common misconception was that like they were giving the air fryers at YCS events.
I thought that was the case.
Yeah, YCS's are a different problem. But like, I mean, I think like if you had a local tournament for any game that you play, whether it's like a card game or a fighting game, and the prize was like, you know, a new desk and chair or like a useful kitchen appliance, a vacuum cleaner even. Like, I don't think that I would say no to that.
Not a cheap vacuum. A cheap vacuum, you're replacing that thing.
Yeah, like, say it's like a $200 vacuum. Like, it's a pretty nice one.
I need name brand, okay? I need Dyson.
So, yeah, like, I thought that was kind of cool.
That had the wind tunnel effect.
Yeah. So, it's nice. Anything else to say about it?
No, I probably couldn't compete in a Street Fighter tournament, maybe a Tekken tournament, but you know, an IKEA Street Fighter tournament, I could lose. I could do that. Yeah.
There were only 12 people, so it actually sounds like it wouldn't have been terribly hard.
I can't beat one person, but sure. GameStop announces Trade Anything Day promotion.
Yay, what is this?
So GameStop recently revealed an unexpected trade-in event coming in early December with the game store's Trade Anything Day. Customers visiting GameStop during the event will reportedly be able to trade in a wide variety of items outside of GameStop's usual inventory, though the event does include a long list of exclusions. GameStop specifies that any of the items traded in will need to fit within a predefined 20 by 20 by 20 shipping container in order to be accepted. GameStop's Trade Anything Day event is scheduled to run only one day on December 6th.
Yeah, I saw this actually on social media. They're doing it. Yeah, you can go into GameStop and trade anything in. Thoughts?
I mean, what a unique idea. Is the idea here that they're going to take in everything for store credit and then sell everything that they got and desperately try and make ends meet that way?
I think that's the only thing they could really be doing. Because, so, I get that it's obviously kind of like slightly shock value marketing, right? Like, come to GameStop and trade anything in. Like, literally, it's whatever you've got sitting around the house. It can be a pillow. It can be a whatever. There's a bunch of exclusions that I saw. Like, I saw that you can't sell, like, hazardous or toxic waste or whatever. So I guess you can't, take a shit in a box and just trade that in for, like, $10 a store credit.
The fact that someone would try that is insane.
Well, but that's the thing, though, is when you have shock value marketing, like, trade in anything. People are going to, you know, anything. They will try their luck. But also, they said, like, you can't do drugs. There's also certain electronics that you can't even do. So I feel like through the amount of restrictions that they have, there might not actually be all that much. But the bigger question that I have about this is, how are they going to value these things?
Maybe they're going to bring in, like, the cast of Pawn Stars, and they're just going to be in there like, best I can do is $15 store credit. Take it or leave it.
Yeah, I mean,
you're gonna have to bring in some outside people, because I highly doubt your regular GameStop staff is prepared to appraise literally anything.
Yeah, that was what I was kind of concerned about. Is like, I guess this is gonna fall to the employees. Like, I'm sure they're gonna give them some vague guidelines on how to like evaluate things, but I think that's actually kind of, I don't want to sound too preachy here, but I feel like that's like, to force your employees to do, like, that's going to be a very busy day if you're a GameStop
employee. What if I bring in, like, I don't know, like a Glock?
Maybe you can't bring weapons, I would hope.
Okay.
I think that might have been on the excluded list.
I don't know. I can't.
Because, like, if you're an employee and you work at GameStop, you know, I don't know what working at GameStop is like exactly. They say it's a little stressful. They're always, like, pushing you to do, like, memberships and pre-orders and stuff.
Upsell.
Yeah, and whatever credit card they have. But, like, if you're going to have to, like, take in all these weird things, find a way to evaluate them, probably get yelled at later by corporate for, like, giving someone too much store credit for this junk or whatever, and also, like, boxing stuff and taking, like, I just feel like that's going to be a really tough day for the employees. Like, that was kind of what I worried about.
Because, I mean, and then it's going to be a long day for the employees because...
Yeah, packaging all that and, like, sorting through it and...
I mean, just getting through the crowd of people because... More people are going to show up for this than they'll have ever seen in their entire lives working at GameStop. Mm-hmm. Why? Not because people like GameStop, but because it's a joke.
It's a moment.
And people are going to stress test the joke.
Yeah, it's going to be about bringing in the craziest thing, getting turned away, and like turning it into content.
Oh, God, there's going to be so many streamers.
Yeah, people are going to be like IRL streaming their trip to GameStop, trying to sell in... Honestly, God knows
what. That's good content, Paul. You should do it.
I mean, I was kind of wondering if, like, what I would, like, literally if I have something that I would, like, want to trade in to GameStop. You got junk all over. But the thing is, like...
Look at that Sonic plush over there.
But the thing is, though, like, the fact that they're giving you GameStop store credit means that, like, I guess it's in their best interest to do this business-wise because... Like, I'm thinking that you're right, and they might just literally be, like, pawning this stuff off, like, afterwards.
I mean,
because there's nothing else they can do with it.
Do with all that nonsense.
Maybe it's, like, a holiday thing. They're going to redistribute it to kids. They're not, but... I mean, you know, the thought...
They can't afford to give anything away.
GameStop's a really, they're interesting. I think that lately it feels like they've kind of leaned in more and more to the like absurdist marketing strategy. Like,
you gotta try a little bit of everything.
Like, have you gotten that impression?
Well, yeah. I mean, we're so far away from the original GameStop wheelhouse at this point. Like, GameStop used to be kind of like the Blockbuster of game buying. It was this staple place. You bought, you traded, you rented games at GameStop. It was just where you went. And now we're talking about, you can buy anime merch there. You can buy Pokemon cards. You can trade anything. Like,
yeah. They're also, they're leaning a lot more into the trading cards, like you said, and like the grading, the what, power packs.
Oh, yeah. Repackaging open product.
Yeah, like the PSA thing. They lean into like the whole like buying the GameStop stock and the investing stuff. Like, I've kind of seen some of their...
They're just desperate, y'all. And, you know, power to them. I'm not about to do none of this because I don't like standing in lines.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like I might go visit. Like, I might go see, like,
what's happening. Drive by my local GameStop on, was it December 6th?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to drive by. If there is no line, I will take whatever's in my car and go trade it in.
That'd be interesting to take whatever junk you have.
Yeah, I'm going to take out my spare tire. Like, how much can I get for this?
You know? I think that part of the fun is going to be, like, what are people going to... Like, I mean, what, like... not absurd, but somewhat reasonable things will be traded in.
So I got about 500 copies of my mixtape.
That's actually, I feel like so much of that's going to be like traded in actually. Like it's like legitimate. Like I feel like so much of like just people's like, here's my mixtape. Like here's my clothing brand or whatever.
It's like, this is my voice actor demo tape. I think it's worth about, you know, $1,000. So how much credit does that get me?
I'm trying to see.
There has to be a limit to how much credit they could even give out. Like, because a truly open window would be insane.
You're going to be getting like very little. Like, I feel like you are going to be. Here's how I imagine it's going to go. If you show up with like, think, what's an item that you would bring to this?
Nothing.
No, just think of something.
There is a book in the back of my car.
Yeah, okay. So it's like a book. So you bring, it's like a hardcover book maybe?
No, it's a paperback.
Okay. It's like this book, I think that what they will do is they will go on like, you know, some pawn type of website, look up its value, and you will get like 20% of that. The used value
20%,
of it, and that's what you will get in store credit.
Absolutely not. Yeah. That book is worth more than that.
That's the thing is, I think like, so if that book sells, like say maybe that book sells for $19.99, a used copy maybe sells for like $12.99. You will probably get like $4 in like store credit.
I got an old pair of boots in my trunk.
Maybe you'll get like $8, $10.
I mean, the Tim's though.
$12.
Wow.
I don't know. I don't think that, because I mean, if you're doing a promotion like this, you can't be giving generous amounts. No, I mean, it's going to have to be.
You can't.
Because like a lot of this stuff at the end of the day, like when they close on December 6th, half it's just going to get thrown away. Like they're going to realize, oh, like this is, we thought this worked. It's actually broken. Like this thing, it's stuff that's like falling apart. A lot of it's going to have to like get tossed.
I wonder how many hard drives they're going to get.
Oh, goodness. Yuck. Just who knows what that
just like entail. Horribly corrupted bricked hard drives.
Oh, I was talking about like ones filled to the brim with like porn or something.
Why would you give that away?
Maybe
that's
you.
That's the treasure trove.
Okay.
You pass that on to your children.
I'm cutting that out. okay. So it's time for the big headliner story of the week.
You sound excited.
Very. It's the Game Awards.
The Game Awards. 2025. It is that time of year again, guys, where gamers come together to agree on how much we love and support gaming and how we agree on what Game of the Year is.
That's right. So on December 11th, we're going to get the announcements of who actually won in all these categories, but the nominations are out. And so is the controversy and everything else.
No controversy. Gamers get real kumbaya this time of year.
Yeah, we covered this last year on the pod. So, you know, I'm always kind of like, I like to know, like, what are people going to be arguing over? And so, here are the Game of the Year nominees. And we're not going to go through every category, but we'll just, you know, we'll go through a few. So, Game of the Year nominations are Claire Obscure, Expedition 33.
Yep, solid game. Can't complain.
Didn't get used to hearing that game. Because that's got a lot of nominations. Death Stranding 2 on the beach.
Did not realize that came out.
Donkey Kong Bonanza.
I did hear about that one.
Hades 2.
Okay.
Hollow Knight Silk Song.
A lot of indie here.
And Kingdom Come Deliverance 2.
So I literally don't know what that last one was. I knew every game except for that.
So what do you think's winning Game of the Year?
Claire Obscure.
Okay, why?
Because Game of the Year. It was Game of the Year before we started talking about what Game of the Year was. It was Game of the Year before a lot of these other games even came out.
Like, what do you mean?
The internet spoke on this a long time ago, and no game this year has really had such a strong consensus that it is the very best of its genre, that it is the game to be playing at a point. There were some solid games this year.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. So social media didn't care about games other as much as this one.
The buzz.
The feed. The virality.
Yeah, Claire Expedition 33. It's an interesting one because it is sort of like a pseudo indie game. The studio that made it, or the team that made it, was very small. Mm-hmm. Although it actually was a pretty large budget game compared to, like, I think what most people would consider indie games otherwise. But yeah, it kind of did take the internet by storm. It kind of came out of nowhere, and it's an RPG, which is sort of surprising to see on a list like this at times. Like, the RPGs don't always make these lists. It felt not quite like Elden Ring, but, like, close in terms of how much people were just culturally and, like, in the gaming sphere. Like, everyone's like, you got to play, like, Expedition 33. So
I mean, it caught a lot of people off guard. I remember when, I think it was a State of Play where they announced it. And no one really had any high expectations. I remember being like, yo, that game looks kind of good, right? For, like, a turn-based game, that game looks really good.
Yeah, that turn-based thing was unique. And then
it was, like, days before it came out, the internet just kind of exploded.
Right, yeah.
And everybody's like, yeah, this is the game. This game is so good. You got to play it. And then I didn't. But not because I thought it was a bad game. I was broke.
I never played it. I mean, I thought it was on Steam, and it turns out it wasn't. So I was like, oh, I'm going to play it. If it's on Steam, I'll get it and, like, throw it in my backlog and actually probably never play it. But, like, tell myself I will.
No, you got to buy a PlayStation and then play it on there.
Oh, goodness, no.
What?
I'll get it on my Steam machine next year.
You can't. Well, maybe by then.
By then it'll
probably be on Steam.
Yeah, so it actually got 12 nominations, which makes it the most nominated game in the history of the Game Awards. Oh, yeah, apparently so.
What all it got nominated for?
Just a bunch. It's Best Game Direction, Best Narrative, Best Art Direction, Best Score in Music, Best Audio Design. Charlie Cox was nominated for Best Performance because he's, like, one of the characters in the game. Yeah, it's in a few of these. So, Best Independent Game.
A few. It's the most in history.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, it got nominated for Best Independent Game?
Best Indie Game. And also nominated for Best Debut Indie Game, which is, like, a little bit... I have thoughts on that. I'll get to them in a second.
I mean, it just reminds me of our arguments about the Game Awards before. And I mean, really, all these awards. Some awards are derivative of others.
Right.
If the game wins, like, Best Indie Game, then it should likely win any other award that's about indie games.
Or really, even you can extrapolate it a bit further. It's like, if the game wins Game of the Year, then in any other given category that it's in, it feels like it's probably going to win that too. Now, that's not me personally saying that, like, that is necessarily the case or that I think it should be, but that sometimes when I see these awards, like these nomination lists, it's kind of like, maybe Expedition 33 shouldn't be, like, competing against, you know, other, like, debut indie games, because it's like, well, we know it's good.
But it did debut as
an indie game. But it's like a debut, I guess. So, and it's also like, Best Indie Game and Best Debut Indie Game being two separate categories is
I don't quite
understand, but like it's just sort of
explain the meaning.
It's so like basically you can be an indie studio and publish multiple games.
Oh, so it's a debut for the studio.
Yeah, it's a debut game for the studio is what that category is. Which there's actually an interesting tidbit about that. The game Megabonk, which was one of the ones that was nominated for best debut indie game, the game's developer actually withdrew the game from consideration.
Why?
Because he said that actually this wasn't the first game that his like team had debuted. So he actually withdrew his game. Which is weird. Like, you don't normally people don't say no to a nomination, but
he's got integrity.
Yeah, so best mobile game, here's some, because I know you play mobile games. Uma Musume Pretty Derby and Wuthering Waves were both nominated alongside Sonic Rumble, Persona 5, The Phantom X, and Destiny Rising. Do you think that either of your games, because I know you play those first two, think either of them will win like best mobile game?
Yes. I think they crushed the competition by far.
Now, which would win up out of the two of them?
This is
your pick anyway.
Tough, but I'm going to give it to Wuthering Waves. Uma Musume is fun. It's a good game. Wuthering Waves, I think, is a better game.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of those games, they exist. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I don't know too much about the mobile
stuff. I
didn't
know Sonic Rumble came out.
Yeah, it came out kind of recently. I remember...
Destiny Rising, I think, came out very recently, too.
Some of these categories, I'll be completely honest, feel like they're just there for, like... I don't want to say, like, for the sake of, but, like, almost as, like, a bit of a weird formality thing.
Yeah, Destiny Rising came out in August.
Sonic Rumble, I think, came out in, like, October, so... So these are kind of late in the year.
Yeah, it's, like, really late. It doesn't even feel like it's fair to compare them to Uma Musume, which has been out for most of the year, and then Wuthering Waves, well, it's been out for years.
Well, speaking of things kind of missing out because of when they came out, the Best Game Adaptation Award, which is basically, like, for...
For movies?
Movies and TV show adaptations of video games. Sonic 3 conspicuously missed out. The five nominations were a Minecraft movie. Makes sense. It was like the biggest movie this year. Devil May Cry, Last of Us Season 2, Splinter Cell Death Watch, and Until Dawn. And I have no clue how deserving each of those is or isn't, but I just thought it was strange that Sonic the Hedgehog 3, like the movie, Sonic 3 was not nominated. And I think the reason why is because it came out last December. Now, it came out last December, the like 21st or something, 24th or whatever.
What are the cutoffs for this?
And they say the cutoffs for Game of the Year is stuff released in December of last year up to end of November of this year. So the fact that Sonic didn't get in has really baffled a lot of people, and most people just feel like they literally forgot. And it's strange because like Sonic 3, of all video game adaptations, is like highly acclaimed. So I'm a little upset about that as a Sonic fan, but other than that, I don't really have too many issues, I think, with a lot of these nominations.
The only one of them I was even intended to... I didn't watch any, just to be clear, but the only one I intended to try was Devil May Cry.
There is one other category that I think I had something to say about. Oh, yeah. I've played Dispatch, which is in Best Debut Indie Game. So,
Dispatch, Claire. Oh, but it's
but it's up against like Expedition 33.
I don't know how you're really going to beat that.
Which means it's probably not going to win. But Dispatch is a really fun sort of story based, like episodic game.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun. I've been playing it a little bit. I like it. I hope that it can win or at least get some attention. I mean, I guess even being a nominee puts some light on your game. So
yeah, I am not caring for some of the games that made it into the pools for these. Yeah. Marvel's Deadpool VR made it into best VR AR game. You know what the release date for that is? November 18th.
Oh, that like came out like yesterday.
Yesterday, as of time of recording. So, it came out yesterday.
Wait, so
and it got nominated for best VR.
So it wouldn't have even been out when...
No.
They were making these. Are you sure it came out just yesterday?
I am... fairly certain because I read a review about it today.
Wow, wait, hold up. Deadpool VR. Because if that's the case, then that really does kind of lend a lot of credence to the theory that, dude, you're so right. This came out November 18th. So how is it nominated? A game that's not even silly. Out?
I don't even think they're taking this seriously.
So yeah, so that really is like they don't care what went that category.
Like, if I had because to they guess, probably only they're have just five trying games. Filling them. Yeah, they're trying to fill some of these categories up, so they got to put it even if the game's been alive for a day, they got to put it in here.
Yeah, because like this list came out like this came out yesterday. That is
incredible.
That's funny.
That is incredible.
Okay, there was another thing too that I saw, which was so like I've never understood why they put sports and racing as one category. So they do like best sports / racing game because the nominations are EA Sports FC 26,
big game,
F1 25.
I think that's a big game.
Rematch.
I don't know. Never heard of that.
Mario Kart World and then Sonic Racing Cross Worlds.
That does make for a strange bracket.
It's weird because it's like I get sports and racing being the same thing if we're talking about like an F1.
Like kart racer should not be
like
there.
Like Gran Turismo, like kind of this like real life racing simulator. That's like, you know. But is anyone cross shopping like EA Sports with like Sonic Cross Worlds and Mario Kart?
No, like Cross World and Mario Kart need to be battling in a different category. But then you can't make a category for just like kart racers. There's not enough of them.
So what they kind of do for that is there's Best Family Game, which they are also both nominated for, but also that's alongside Lego Party, Lego Voyagers, two different Lego games.
Well, all Lego games are going to be family games.
Donkey Kong Bonanza, Split Fiction, and yeah.
Sorry, I was just thinking, like, what if they made out like an 18 plus Lego game?
I feel like that was something that they said they were going to do. It's
Grand Theft Auto Lego.
Like Lego GTA. I feel like I had. Was that like a thing that they were saying they were going to do?
I have no idea.
Maybe not. But it is just stuff like that is always strange to me because, like, I think the further you go down these categories, the more you realize, like, family game is a little ambiguous.
Most definitely.
Something that's also weird. Now, I'm looking at this. At first, I was like, yeah, I don't care about these nominations. Now I'm like double checking. I was like, actually, yeah. Some of these are actually very strange. Because, so for instance, I was looking at Best RPG. And, like, is Monster Hunter Wilds an RPG? Like, be honest.
Yes. I will say it's an RPG. It has a...
I'm going to cut you off real quick.
Okay.
Because I want to reframe that. Would you say that Monster Hunter is more of an RPG or more of an action game?
It depends on how you want to look at the game. Because Monster Hunter does have a full story mode with characters. You are a character within a world. Mm-hmm. There's a conflict. People need your help and you do help them. And then when you get to post-game, it fully devolves into the action game that it is.
I guess what's the point I'm getting at here is it's nominated for Best RPG, which, like, fine, but it's not in Best Action Game. And I feel like if I had to give it a
percentile rating. I do think if you were choosing action or RPG, I would throw
it's like
action.
It's like 60-70% like action, like 30. And there's nothing wrong with it being there, but it's just like those Dragon Quest like remake games, like the HD 2D remakes that came out this year, I feel like those would have been in like
it is interesting they did RPG. Not make it even into the RPG category.
There's also that
but it doesn't matter because Claire Obscura is here, so.
Yeah, I know. There's also that new Trails game, Trails of Arise, I think, that came out this year.
Now you know niche JRPGs are
and
not
going to
make.
And that's the problem. It's like,
list.
It's in the best RPG
category. Oh,
wait, I
just talked about Dragon Quest like it's not a niche JRPG.
Yeah, and I guess like maybe that's what it really comes down to is like, because JRPGs are so niche, they just wouldn't make it into these. Bit of a shame.
I like the best fighting game category. That's fun. A collection game got in.
What? Oh, yeah. Capcom Fighting Collection 2. So there's a bunch of fucking now. Old-ass Capcom games in a bundle. Well, is that Game of the Year? Like, what?
I mean, it's crazy.
Fighting Game of the Year?
Because, like, Capcom Fighting Collection 2 kind of should win just because, well, it's got hits on there. Like.
But see... Yeah, I don't know that much about the fighting games.
And in Mortal Kombat Legacy Collection? No, there was two collection games in this category.
I hope neither of them win. Not because like the games contained within are bad, but like if a collection wins like a category in 2025's Game Awards and it's like a collection of like old shit from 20 years ago.
That would be
incredibly
disrespectful. I think they were just filling up the category because they kind of have to just give it to Fatal Fury. I mean, they might give it to 2XKO. They shouldn't, but like... that should just be a lock for Fatal Fury. It's kind of the only full real fighting game released this year. We're not looking at you, Virtua Fighter.
There's one other thing that, like, and I totally understand why this is, although I have questions. Best multiplayer. This is strange because Marvel Rivals should be on here. Like, there's no way Marvel Rivals shouldn't be on. It came out last December, which is, I guess, it's like that. In a similar boat.
Straight up, not here.
To like Sonic, the Sonic movie. But also, like, my second thing with like best multiplayer, and this is, I'll admit, there's like a personal thing for me, is like, these games are all like online multiplayer, and I kind of don't like that like local multiplayer just doesn't seem like it ever gets into these.
But what's local multiplayer?
Sonic Racing and Mario Kart. That's what came to mind for me.
Oh, like, but those are also online multiplayer.
They do have online multiplayer, but like they have like local kind of co-play, and I kind of feel like that, I don't know.
I'm starting to think that these categories were filled out not by a full team, but by like maybe a handful of like two or three people.
Yeah, it's that age-old thing with the Game Awards. Every year, you kind of look at these nominations and you realize that it's not really like an award.
They really should have like a survey or something to just pass around and get a large amount of data. That way, the categories are filled through data and not by a few limited people. I mean, you can always skew data because the most popular things will always be there. But you know,
but I think that is how like the JRPGs and stuff tend to miss out. Is because like the panel, I'm sure, that's like deciding on these nominations,
the duo,
is likely largely the duo.
It's
like
both of them.
Jeff Keighley and Kojima. but like, I don't know. I get the impression that it's probably a more Western panel. So that's probably how, like, your niche JRPG just doesn't make it in. And it does seem like when I see things like the Deadpool VR game on here, it's like, well, okay, they were just anticipating that this game that's not out yet will just be good enough to, like...
That one's crazy to me. That one's insane. And the Batman Arkham game, did that come out within the window? Because I would have thought that would have made the list. But maybe it was in last year's Game Award. I'm just going to check real quick. Arkham VR.
I guess, like, you know, when I look at this, maybe it just makes me realize, like, wait, okay. Marvel Rivals is in best ongoing game.
Oh, 2016.
No, you're thinking of a different... There's a different Batman VR game, though.
Maybe I've got the wrong
name. Arkham VR.
It's like Quest 3.
Because it came out maybe a year ago?
I could have sworn, but maybe I'm crazy. Arkham Shadow? Oh, 2016.
Huh. That's weird. Well, either way, yeah, so Marvel Rivals is in best ongoing game.
Yeah, but that's a stacked category. I just started looking at it.
Yeah.
Final Fantasy 14, Fortnite, Helldivers 2, Marvel Rivals, No Man's Sky. So you can cross out No Man's Sky and good luck.
I think that Helldivers is going to win it.
Helldivers...
That's been a pretty big
was
game.
...was huge. Helldivers had a real-world impact.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Okay, that's another thing. Best ongoing game and best community support always felt kind of redundant.
Especially since they basically put the same games in both.
Yeah. Like, I see, like, Baldur's Gates in there. But other than that, it's like...
Like, yeah, you just switch out Marvel Rivals.
Four of the same games.
Call it a day.
Yeah, so some of these are weird. But I will, like, I guess, line all of that by saying I haven't even played half the shit. Like, half these... more than half the shit. I've played, like, exactly... 2 new games this year. So really, my opinion on this means nothing. Like, I'm sitting here like, oh my god, this shouldn't win and this should be nominated. It's like, well, what does it matter? Like, I've already played like Sonic Racing and Dispatch.
Yeah, where is the best monster collector category?
You know, that actually should be a category. I just noticed Pokemon isn't in best RPG.
I mean, Pokemon's gotten so much hate in the last like decade.
But like,
I mean, yes, it probably should still be represented.
Yeah,
somehow.
It's still like it's Pokemon, right?
Like maybe best family game. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not in best family game.
Best and
it's,
fighting game. I don't know.
And it's not in. Yeah,
the new game is more of an action style game.
Like, not in that either.
No, yeah, that
best best debut indie game.
Best, yeah. It was, you know, it's a small team.
Yeah, the small team,
really small team.
They do have most anticipated game, which, like, of course, it's going to be GTA 6. Why do they even do this?
Well, I mean, so just because a game is a lock for a category does not mean you should not fill out the category anyway.
Yeah.
Let's see what else is on here. 007 First Light. That was one of the games I saw that. I was like, oh, I want to play that.
Marvel's Wolverine.
That's pretty cool. I want to play that. Oh, it and Grand Theft Auto are going to come out within the same like window now.
Oh, that's true. Sorry, Resident Wolverine.
Evil Requiem. Absolutely not. I don't like being scared.
The Witcher 4 is actually a pretty good one to have. That's here. Also I know a lot of people too. Do look forward to that. That's CD Projekt
Red. We have some good games on the horizon. Now, this should be the real kicker. It should be most anticipated game for 2026. And then let's see if we cross off the list.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Like, what's not actually going
to
release?
That, what I was going to say is, I thought you were going to joke about this. Is like, it should be like most anticipated game that will actually fucking come out. Because, like, here's the thing.
Which one will GTA, not get pushed back
GTA,
again?
when it had a May release date, I think that was a fair thing to be in this category.
Right.
For it to now have, like, a November release date makes me kind of scared. Because it's like, it's going to win most anticipated game in 2026 and just not actually come out in 2026.
And then it'll be in the Game Awards for next
and
year
it'll be as next the most anticipated game.
Like, it's their strategy to rack up awards before the game comes out.
Yeah.
Ingenious.
And they missed us on Best Content Creator of the Year.
Compared to K-Drell, Kai Sinat,
Moist Critical,
Sakura Miko, and The Burnt Peanut. I'm not going to lie, I haven't heard of any of these people. Well, okay, I've heard of like two of them. But for the most part, I have no idea who these people are. But, you know, I don't consume a lot of content. Yeah, so
you can write us in the ballots.
Yeah, write us in next time, guys. Just put in The Pod of Greed. We'll be the only podcast. They should be a podcast category.
And we'll be the only ones in it. I like the sound of that.
That's ingenious.
Very good. Okay, well, that's the Game Awards. I mean, I will try to tune in if I can remember to. And it's December 11th.
If for no other reason, we'll tune in so we can make content.
Yeah, maybe it could be fun. Anywho, yeah, so that's that. Any other stories that we have?
There's a new word a year.
Okay.
So the Cambridge Dictionary has chosen their word a year for 2025. Paul, want to take a wild guess? Or what word do you think should be the word for this year?
Well, I know lately these have been very like internet based. Like it's kind of what the trendy really internet been. Word. What is a word that I see like way too much online right now?
Aura.
Aura, yeah. Cooked.
Cooked.
Peak. These internet words.
6-7.
Yeah, that's the internet word of the year.
That should be it, honestly. But no, none of those words are Cambridge Dictionary's word of the year. Their word of the year is parasocial.
Ah.
The term refers to a one-sided connection someone feels towards a public figure, fictional character, or artificial intelligence. I like how they added in artificial intelligence because guys, your AI girlfriend is a parasocial relationship. I don't know who needs to hear this, but you need to hear this.
Parasocial suggests that they're real, though, still.
I don't think it does. Okay. It can be an AI.
So, yeah, I guess it's following a sharp rise in global lookups tied to creators, viral fan behavior, and growing concerns about AI companions. I guess you're right, yeah. Growing concerns.
The biggest single jump came on June 3rd when YouTube 30th. Streamer... 30th, yes.
Yeah.
When YouTube streamer Aisho Speed blocked a fan who called herself his number one parasocial. She called herself that? That's really self-aware. Mm. Can it be parasocial if you know it's parasocial?
Yeah, I still think so.
Well, her reaction went viral, pushing searches for the term to one of the year's highest points.
So yeah, Cambridge cites the moment as a clear driver behind parasocial becoming one of its most searched definitions. This is so interesting. I mean, like, I'm not going to lie. I agree with this. I think it's, at least as a term that has felt very relevant this year more than ever. You know, just a few weeks ago, we were talking about the Emmy Roo situation. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about the, like, Wolfie VGC situation. I do get the impression that, like, with every passing year of, like, this modern internet and, like, content and whatever, there is more, like, we just see, like, more and more weird fan idol worship, obsessive thing, you know, stalking type of incidents that happen. So, yeah, parasocial, involving or relating to a connection that someone feels between themselves and a famous person they do not know, or a character in a book, film, TV series, etc., or an artificial intelligence.
I feel like so many times when we were when we would go to like YCS's, their large Yu-Gi-Oh events, we would meet people who had formed these parasocial relationships with us. And it was before we ever knew of the phrase parasocial, but that's the only way, now that I know the word, it's the only way I can describe it. Because we would always say, like, people just, they come up to us and they talk to us like they know us, like we're already their best friend, and we're still trying to remember their names.
Well, oftentimes not remember, it's like learn.
Yeah, learn. The initial, for us, it's an initial meeting, but for them, it was like meeting a long-term friend. And I remember it was so off-putting because we're all weird introverts. And yeah. So we don't have large circles, and we would go to Yu-Gi-Oh! Events, and we find out that we've been best friends for like 6 years.
It is kind of bizarre, I think, that, like, you know, we talked about this a few weeks ago, so I won't try to retread too much ground
here. We're not going to beat the horse.
But, like, yeah, it's the internet. I mean, you look at a screen, you see a person, and so much of the way that things are presented by content creators is to make you feel like you are, you kind of know them, like you can rely on them. You share their beliefs and views.
I'm famously unreliable.
And stuff like that. And so, like, I guess the idea being that people in a world that is a little lonely, a little miserable, people latch onto that and they really take it as truth. It's funny because I haven't talked about this too much, I think, on the podcast, but like
true Paul stories.
You know, like, I don't know. Sometimes I as a content creator myself, I actually have less faith anytime I see something that's like recorded in video. No, because knowing, you know, what I know about like, like, I've met certain content creators in real life. And, like, mm-hmm. I have, like, a something of a working relationship with, like, YugiTubers and, like, other kind of people. And so, like, I've heard things that they've said behind closed doors.
Well, he said they all fake.
Yeah, that's right. No, but, like, I mean, I've heard things that people have said behind closed doors. I've, you know, had, like, really, like, what I would consider to be, like, kind of heartfelt moments with them. But also, like, things that they don't like necessarily about the YouTube creation journey and like comments, live streams, all these things. And so knowing that, like, fundamentally when something is recorded in video, I don't distrust like that it exists. I mean, AI is here to take away that trust.
Oh yeah.
But more like, you know, if a content creator kind of makes a video and they say like, yeah, like this and another, and I believe this and I'm looking forward to it, it's like it's naturally curated. Because at its core, I choose when to turn the camera on and off. So by, you know, sort of like fundamentally, I am picking how I'm presented. I chose the lights to look this way. I chose our seats to be this in these positions. Like, you know, we picked the topics that we would discuss today. Because it's not just a matter of like, you're kind of getting this completely candid look at everything. The content creator is still deciding what you see and what you don't see and how you perceive them. And that really, it's unfortunate that on the receiving end of that, for a viewer or a listener, particularly somebody who might be like very young and impressionable,
mm-hmm.
or lonely at the time, they will tune into like a live stream or something and feel like this is their friend. And it's just, it's an unfortunate thing.
So I do have a personal rule when it comes to content on the internet. Because so many people think what they're watching is authentic. And you want to believe that your favorite creators are being authentic. I'll tell you this. My rule is, if their video, whether it's an apology video or a takedown video, if the video is well lit, yeah. Like even throughout, like the lights even at all angles. Not authentic.
Yeah, there was deliberation there.
Like, who has a like meltdown or a breakdown or they're angry, right? But still takes out the time to properly position all their lights and like make sure. Yeah. Come on now.
I know what you mean. And like, and that's why, like, when I sometimes I'll read, you know, like, have you ever seen like these? It's like some drama between some content creators you've never heard of till today, right? Like, in some sector of the internet, and they're beefing and some VTubers or whatever. And like, you'll, and people have these like Google Docs that get linked where it's like, here's this long expose and all these things that they did to me and said, and it's been going on for months. And like, and it's just kind of like, well, you, at its core, like, you published this, which means that like, you wrote it and kind of had to write it in such a way to like, I'm the victim. I'm so sad. Like, this terrible thing's happened to me. Here's why I deserve your pity and your sympathy. Oh, I didn't word that right. Here, let me change this word. Let me change that word. Okay, now publish. And then I'm going to like go and I'm going to like make the tweet and say like, okay, here, like, you know, read this to like get my side of the story. And it's like, I know that that's maybe too skeptical of you for some people. Like, it sounds like I'm maybe, you know, being mean, but like, I guess I just don't ever trust that much of anything on the internet. It's like completely authentic.
And look, and guys, you don't even have to take what we're saying at like for at face value. Look how well lit I am.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, but even like, yeah, it's like, it's the same thing. Like, there, you just don't know about these people. Like, you'd be terribly surprised that this is kind of getting a little off topic, but like, there's something that happens a lot. I notice whenever like an internet controversy kind of comes up is like, people will like, let's say you're in, you know, some community and like, so-and-so got caught doing weird, crazy thing with fan or like was in some controversy, right? And they get, you know, canceled, excommunicated from the community, banned from gatherings, whatever. Mm-hmm. Happens a lot. And I'll see people and they'll say these things like, you know, like, at least we still have so-and-so in the community. Like, they're one of the good ones.
Yeah, one of the good
this
ones.
Tends to, and I don't know if that's like this human desire to, when we're met with, I guess, like, surprise and shock, we therefore cling closer to the things that, like, you know, we bring everything else closer as a result, right? Like, I lost this friend, but, like, I will, like, bring the rest closer, right? Like, tighter knit. And so I was like, whenever I read somebody say, like, oh, well, so-and-so would never do that. He's wholesome. Like, we should protect her. She... And it's like, and then a few months pass or a few years pass and another expose and it turns out they were a
nobody's
terrible person.
Nobody's wholesome in content creation, y'all. We're all sociopaths.
That's the thing is like, I actually don't think that like anyone's wholesome. Myself
we're
included.
All
I don't
just
think
poorer
anyone's...
versions of Jake Paul. Yeah, think about right. that. Think,
yeah.
Think about that. I'm not wrong.
So I don't know. It's that's my little, sorry, I didn't probably do that too far, but yeah. So
it's fine. This is our podcast. The one and only podcast on the internet where you're not going to get discussions like this anywhere else.
Yeah. Okay. So it's time, I think, for some viewer questions.
Yeah. I want to hear what they have to say. And then we'll talk some more.
Yeah. So these are questions that you guys can submit to the link in the description. Next week, though, we'll be answering a bunch of these, unlike the usual two. So get your questions in for next week. All right. So this is a Yu-Gi-Oh! Related one. They actually both are. A moot point now that the format has ended, but do you think Speed Duel should have covered 5Ds and added Synchro Monsters if it kept going?
That was a question that we got many, many times during the actual reign of Speed Duels. And I think, for the most part, we kind of just agreed that at the beginning with 5Ds is where Yu-Gi-Oh! Takes a distinct turn.
Yeah.
With the speed and power of the cards that we use.
Yeah, the way that they're designed.
And like, maybe you can get away with it like the first couple sets within like this new this hypothetical 5Ds Speed Duel series. But at some point, it becomes way too much trouble to try to rein that in.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, like, I think coming at it from a strictly like Speed Duels is kind of an anime adaptation format, right? From that point of view, yeah, it would have been cool. Like, add 5Ds, add synchros, you know, character cards and skills would have been cool. I think from a gameplay angle, though, you would start to experience a certain amount of, like, power creep in terms of design. even if you left out some of the like really strong cards, like I would imagine Speed Duel wouldn't want to add like emergency teleport, for instance.
We wouldn't have.
Or kind of those types of cards that are just like normal summon this and like it immediately summons a material like straight from your deck. Because that's where that ends up, right?
But still, it will get there. You want to go through all of 5Ds. The combos are going to start comboing. Unless we're never going to make Quasar. We're just going to pretend like Quasar didn't exist.
I mean, I think that you could, just to humor this, I guess, a bit more, I think like there's a world where if you use like the first year of Synchros, I think that's probably where it is.
That's what I was saying. Like, I think you can start off fine, but if we're going to fully go through everything that 5Ds gave us, it's going to get obscene. It has to.
Yeah. I wonder what archetypes and stuff. I mean, I guess they're going to mostly be character-based. So, like, Akiza's got, like, Rose Dragons. Yusei's got Junk Tuner stuff.
It's like, and then, so then, what cards do you give them, Wings. Right? With Yusei and, like, people like Yusei Crow, it's easy. There are so many Black Wings and Synchron Junk Monsters that they could definitely slow roll out some, like, functional but weak strategies. But what do you do with Rose Dragons?
One cool part is that because the monster zone is limited to three, that might naturally kind of limit synchro summoning. Just because, like, once you've made one synchro, it's going to be a little hard to make a second. Like, not impossible, but it's just like you have to have a tuner and a non-tuner, but oftentimes for any higher level synchro, you just might need three monsters. And so once you've made, like, Stardust Dragon or, you know, Iron Chain Dragon or something,
If this hypothetical format went anything like how it did in Duel Links, you make your big synchro, set two traps, you are now in the position to win the game.
Yeah. So the anime duelist in me says I would have liked if they did. The game balance guy in me says it's probably better that they didn't, I guess.
It's a slippery slope. I mean, when we talk about it, it probably was more doable than I think. But it would have been hard, and I don't know if Konami really would have wanted to go through the trouble of taming that format.
They do have the Duel Links data. Like, they would have known kind of how that went in Duel Links, what maybe their missteps were. They could try not
Infernity.
Yeah, because I know, like, Duel Links, they say nowadays Duel Links is just insane. Like, it's basically modern Yu-Gi-Oh! With skill cards.
It's modern Yu-Gi-Oh! But you only have three zones to play with, and that is not stopping them.
Yeah, unless your skill card gives you extra zones, because some of them
do often, especially when they introduce pendulums. There are a number of skills that give you additional pendulum zones.
I also found it funny that, like, a lot of the skills will, like, these days that I've seen, like, they start you out with something in your grave.
Yeah, they
like
can
you,
do that.
Like, you begin the duel with, like, Destiny Hero Malicious in your graveyard, and it's like, oh, gosh,
In that way, Duel Links has truly become a real, like, digital card game. It's not just a simulated version of Yu-Gi-Oh! The skills break the rules in a way that are too difficult to, like, do in the TCG, which I do like. I like it when digital card games truly show why they're digital.
Yeah, Yu-Gi-Oh! Is an interesting one because it can just get the way Yu-Gi-Oh! Kind of power creep in Yu-Gi-Oh! Always kind of gets there.
Yeah.
Like, once the power level's high, people are doing crazy shit. And, like, I think it can be divisive, right? Like, Duel Links might have been once seen as Yu-Gi-Oh! On training wheels. Now it's kind of more like, it's just a different form of
a different pain.
Yeah.
A different pain. Like when I was in the Invitational.
Yeah, you were playing Rush Duel, right?
Yeah.
It was a little different.
It won.
Well, here's another question. You're sent out to another universe that does not have Yu-Gi-Oh! At all. How do you create the game, and what do you choose to leave out of it? What are you adding to it to ensure that it's successful there?
That's funny. So essentially, I can make Yu-Gi-Oh! In my own image.
Yeah, you're creating Yu-Gi-Oh! For a new timeline.
I think, so I wouldn't actually move past DM anytime soon. Like, I'd actually rock with DM a lot longer. I would make Red Eyes and Blue Eyes much larger parts of the branding and the stories that are told.
Okay.
Like, I would, like, by the time I would be done with DM, Red Eyes and Blue Eyes would be the two faces of Yu-Gi-Oh! And Yu-Gi-Oh! GX would be characters inheriting those cards and then building decks around them, and like building like fusion decks around them.
Right. I think like I would like, just kind of speaking from a game design perspective, I think I would have built in more guardrails for Yu-Gi-Oh! Early on. It so often becomes clear
to me. You put a mana system in?
Something like it. I mean, it becomes like so clear to me every time I look at like the way that modern Yu-Gi-Oh! Works, where it's just gas, gas, gas until like the end of time. Turns just don't end at times. It's like, I think I would have maybe... The hard once per turn would have been like a fundamental rule, for instance. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have, you know, I would know about what missing the timing is. So that would have never, it just wouldn't be like a factor as well. It's a lot like sort of the messy things like that. I think that some sort of a limitation on just like fundamentally what card design, like I don't know if I'd have a special summon limit or just something that kind of suggests that your turn can only go so far. Maybe there'd just be more lock in from the start. But creatively speaking, I like what you're saying about like blue eyes, red eyes kind of being more of the mascots and more like prominent in the marketing and stuff.
I mean, for me, like changing Yu-Gi-Oh!, it's like it begins with like the anime, manga, and then like the branding. Like, it would take me a while to even get to the cards because I'd be laser focused on like recreating the anime in the way I want it to be made.
I do think that if I could have recreated the anime, there's probably a, I think that like, speaking of just those early anime arcs, right? Obviously we were like kind of following Yu-Gi-Oh! Or like Yugi and his friends. But I think that like, there's a lot of potential to just drag those out and like better establish what Duel Monsters is in the show. Like, mm-hmm. You know, what are you expected to have in your deck? Where do people get their cards from? Like,
we only really saw them buy cards, like,
once. Yeah, it's like one episode, and it's kind of weird because Yugi's grandpa owns a game shop, but I guess like the other game shop had different packs, is like, the implication.
And his, I guess he sold like Duel Monster cards, but who's his distributor? Like, what was that like? What are margins on cards like? Were they going under?
So, probably there was never anybody in there. So, I don't know. I think that would have been cool to see, like, Battle City. Because, like, Battle City gets you so hyped about, like, this idea of, like, you know, you can go around the city and, like, challenge anybody. And with your dual disc, no matter where I challenge you, we can just have a duel there.
It is crazy just how many card game players were in Domino City.
And also, you see things like, oh, Mai made it to the Battle City Finals. And, like, she got her locator cards before Yugi or Joey did. And so, it's like, the implication there is she was, like, taking names out there in Battle City, right? And like
that didn't help her in the end.
And like, you know, Weevil and Mako and all these people, like they were also doing things too. And so it kind of would have been nice to see like more of those characters' duels, fleshing those decks out a little bit more so that when that does come to the card game, we could have a better idea of where to go with that stuff. So,
you know, when I was playing Pokemon Zeta A, they have this concept of the Zeta A Royale, where at night the city has these zones where Pokemon trainers can just kind of battle, and it's not like a consensual thing. If you're just out in a battle zone and someone sees you, they can just send their Pokemon right at you and get busy.
Yeah,
and that's just how it works. And I thought, it's like, I wonder if this is what Battle City was like, where like
it kind
you
of walk feels like it.
One step, you see someone, you have a duel, your duel ends, someone bumps in you up, you're in another duel.
Well,
now.
There's actually a part in there's a part where Kaiba says you're not allowed to like turn down a challenge. Like it's like one of the rules is like you can't say no to a duel. Because Yugi
what
tries
if I'm
to
in
do
the
that.
Bathroom? What if I'm like 2 seconds away from bursting? And they're like, let's duel. I surrender.
Yeah. So I thought that there could be a lot of potential to just see like what people's experiences were like. Because like even I remember right before the Battle City Finals when like Bakura gets like kind of speed runs his locator cards against Bones and his friends. It's like, well, so like they were dueling in the tournament too. Mm-hmm. And like so Bones was dueling people in the cemetery. And so it's like, I'd like to have seen a few of those. Like, it's kind of that age-old, like, Yugi is the main character, but how cool would it have been to see, like, Weevil versus Bones, Rex versus, you know, Mako. Like,
I would have liked to see what other underhanded tricks Weevil was willing to pull on other players.
And you know he was, because he was always cheating. So
it's like we've seen him whip up Yugi's Exodia pieces, sneak the parasite into Joey's deck.
Yeah,
like what else? Because the kid was a mess.
So yeah, like I think, or even like Arcana versus somebody, like you know, just these. I know some of them are it's like rare hunters, but even with the rare hunters, even though part of his goal was to like find Yugi and all this stuff, it also kind of seemed like the rare hunters were just challenging people to take their rare cards. Like that was also part of their objective. And so
how many people did Arcana cut with those blades?
And so it's like, were they challenging other duelists on the street? And like, what did some of that look like? So
that'd be crazy. You get challenged by a man in a mask and he's like, come on inside to duel me. It's like, why can't we duel out here?
Also, we've got a review. It's been a while, but we do have a new review. I meant to read this a couple weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
But it's a nice review. It's got a bit of a question to it as well. We appreciate it if you guys ever do leave us reviews on Spotify, Apple.
We do.
Whatever allows you to do them. This is from JLB89. Hey, guys. First time providing a review. Honestly forgot how to since I listened to you guys on Apple. LOL. I do have a question. Given the current direction of the game, while Pendulum is the least popular mechanic, do you think there's any chance that Konami would make a cybersecurity-based Pendulum archetype? I ask because Cybers is the only type that doesn't have at least one monster that's also a Pendulum. And if so, what do you think the strategy might be?
Cybers does not have any Pendulums. Huh.
Pendulum is in a weird spot in general because, like, it just, all of its stuff is so, like, walled garden. Like, you rarely see a Pendulum archetype combining with a non-Pendulum one.
At least not anymore. Like, when Pendulums were new, we were getting some, like not archetypal, but kind of like...
There was some synergy.
There were some synergistic things that were built in the cards.
You're right.
Not anymore. They do not do that anymore. That is not a thing.
If they were to do a Cybers thing, it's like Pendulum?
I mean, the fact that they don't have it, I feel like it's by design. But given the fact that we don't have a Yu-Gi-Oh! Anime, and I don't know when that's ever going to change, they kind of have to hit everything eventually. So they will likely make a Pendulum Cybers strategy at some point. What would the theme be?
I'm trying to think of something that... Because Pendulum's kind of their one thing in the Spell and Trap Zone. They're another thing in the Monster Zone. And then Cybers are supposed to be like computer... programs stuff. Like in sort of these computer avatars that are doing things within the internet.
Something random access memory, you fill up the board and your opponent,
you know what, hard drive, like pulling things from like a hard drive, like when they're in your, this is like totally off the top of my head, when they're in your Pendulum Scales, they are basically like memory, like in your computer, you know what I mean? Like a hard drive or RAM or something. And then, like, when you do the Pendulum Summon, it's kind of like, I guess, like you're, like, accessing, like, your VRAM. I don't know. I mean, I know that's, like, that's just my starting place, but that's kind of where my mind went.
I'm honestly not sure, though I do think that we will just get around to it at some point.
They will. That's true.
It's Konami. Once again, we don't have an anime, so Konami doesn't actually have the ability to just not do something.
Speaking of anime, that's a great little note to end off on. I didn't know, but apparently there is an episode 6 of The Fallen and the Virtuous
that's coming out this month. I'm excited.
You guys got to forgive me. I was like, yeah, there's only going to be 5, because I thought that they said there was only going to be 5.
Yeah, Paul's like spreading misinformation.
Yeah, I was lying on the internet. But no, they're going to be fighting the Great Sea Snake Golgonda.
The Great Serpent of
and
Golgonda.
It also appears that Fleur de Lis will be making a return based on the like early concept art.
That does make sense because it's during that fight that she appears with the two other guys and the lightning strikes.
Yeah, Odin and Theo.
Whatever their names are.
Aiden and Theo.
They're quickly forgotten. That's what they are.
So yeah, we will hopefully be able to chat about that next time because I think that actually comes out tomorrow?
I have no idea.
I believe. I don't know. Or maybe it's like next. Think maybe tomorrow. Either way, we'll talk about it soon. All right, that's it. Thank you guys for tuning in to
the
pod this week. It's been a lot of fun. We hope you all have a wonderful week.
We'll see you guys in the next one.
Pass turn.